everybody. This is Patricia Corey, Beyond the Matrix, the program that dares you to think outside of the box of convention. I've got an exciting program for you today, but before I get started, I'd like to tell you that I'm just back from the jungles of Chiapas, covered in mosquito bites and filled with outrageous information and experience about the shamanic path of the Mayans, and a lot of exciting news for you. So I'll be getting that up on my website soon at www.syrianrevelations.net. And I am definitely planning the trip to this region to work with the shamans here, particularly with Cayum, who is the grandson of Chan Kin Viejo, the true spirit master of the Lokandon people. So lots coming up for you. Stay in touch and be sure to keep it posted on my site. And I will be looking forward to telling you about that in a future program. Okay, today I'm excited to welcome Rene Jorgensen. His book is Welcome to Awakening Afterlife. And we're going to be talking about the experience of what happens after death and the real purpose of life. I'd just like to tell you a little bit about Rene. He had an amazing spiritual experience, a very deep near-death experience on a voyage in India. And he's going to be talking about how that developed into his new vision for life and his book, which will be available to you on Amazon.com or Borders.com. Are you there, Rene?
Yes, I'm here, Patricia. Thank you for having me.
Can you talk a little louder? Because I'm having trouble hearing you.
You're having trouble hearing me. All right, I'll just turn off the volume a little bit, yeah? All right, is that good?
It's better.
All right, okay.
Okay, you have to keep your voice near the speaking. Close to the phone. There you go. Okay, thanks, Rene, for joining us. I mean, this is such an international situation here. I'm in Mexico, and Rene's in Canada, right?
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
Yeah, and we've got the radio station from the States. So this is the magnificence of technology.
Yes, the world is getting smaller.
Thank you for joining us.
Okay, thank you very much. Yeah, and thank you for having me.
It's a delight. Okay, well, I brought your book with me on my journey so that I could really delve into the material that you've written, but it cut waterlogged in the
in the jungle.
I have been on the most outrageous journey, and your book
sounds like it.
It has been. It's lying somewhere in a slog of mud.
All right. Okay, but you've been
hopefully
speaking,
someone will pick it up when the rain stops.
Oh, when it dries, yeah.
Yeah, when it dries.
Well, it sounds like interesting. You are having a shamanic quest out there in the jungle. It sounds really interesting.
It has been really interesting. I'm all over the world now, trying to tune into all of the sources of wisdom that we have of the real, the ancient wisdom, and I've had quite a journey.
Yeah.
But let's talk about yours.
All right. Yeah. Sure. Well, my journey is definitely. Related to the show, it's definitely a very powerful journey beyond the matrix, which is really what the near-death experiences are. I mean, this experience of another dimension beyond the physical world as we know it is really truly going beyond the matrix. And that's where my personal journey started about 7 years ago now.
Okay, I'd like you to tell us, to start off by telling us about, let's keep any kind of religious overtone out of the interview for the moment.
All right.
Let's get to the essence of that experience. What exactly happened when you had this experience?
Well, I was on a travel in India, and I had a travel partner, a girl from Japan, and our relationship developed quite intimate. In a way, I was a very selfish person. I was an atheist, and I didn't believe in anything bigger than myself. And basically, what happened through the meeting with her was an opening. She opened me up in a way. She opened my heart. And actually, the day I had this experience, I was actually under the influence of the drug LSD. But the day this happened, it was kind of a penetration where we were in this very intimate talk that actually made me leave my body. And leaving my body, I entered this, what is usually called the light outside the body. And it's just
while you were under the influence of LSD, right?
Yes, exactly, yeah,
okay.
Exactly, yeah. But it was kind of the trigger of my experience was kind of an ego-death experience, in a way. And that's really where the near-death element comes in. And after leaving the body, I mean, I was literally able to see myself and her from outside my body. I was like in the air and looking down towards myself and where she was. And outside the body here, I was kind of in this love, this infinite love, this like the ultimate structure of reality as the essence of the universe in a way. And after having this realization that this was really ultimately love, then I had a what's called a life review, meaning that I suddenly, from realizing that everything was interconnected and everything was love, I realized also that part of my life I'd been selfish and I'd been separated from this truth, you could say. And therefore I began to have a life review where I saw images from my life where I had hurt other people in a way where I had not been loving and caring towards other people. So I would go through all these scenes of hurting everything from an ex-girlfriend to my mother and even to a little small girl in school, like in fourth grade I was teasing. Only it was a very powerful emotion because I would enter the other person's feelings at the time. I would actually be on the receiving end of my own actions.
Now, let me interject here.
Yes?
Is this similar to what people describe as the lifetime passing before their eyes at the death or near death experience?
Yes, that's what it is. That's exactly the same. We call it usually in the research, it's called a life review. But it's like a movie, a flashback that goes in front of your eyes where you see all your life in backflash in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And they're both positive and negative. I mean, some people will see positive episodes of their life, but I guess I was a hard case there. I'd probably been pretty selfish. So all I saw was my negative episodes of my life. And you could say that really coming back from the experience, that really gave me the fuel to transform my life and change the direction of my life.
And that's also exciting.
Yeah, and that's also the motive for writing the book. I mean, the title Awakening Afterlife was really, that was my personal experience that I really awoke to this purpose of life, which is not to hurt other people in a way. The life review is a very deep reflection, a very deep statement of what we know as the golden rule, that we should respect each other, and that's really my personal experience.
A lot of my listeners have already gone through this or are going through this now, as we all really feel the enormous shift that's happening at this time in our lives on the planet, and so many people are looking for spiritual answers to the experience of life on this planet.
Yes, you're right. Yeah, I think we're in an awakening. Just the fact that if we look within the field of near-death experiences, it's something that's happening more and more frequently. Of course, medical techniques of bringing people back and such are also improving, but we do see that there is a more rapid reoccurrence. It seems like there's something happened on a planetary scale, a spiritual awakening. I agree with that very much.
I would say even beyond that, probably on a universal scale. In my books, we talk about how the sun is preparing to leave the third dimension,
yes,
and all the planets are going to go with it. So
yes,
we're definitely going to experience some wild things in the next few years.
Yes, definitely. I agree with you.
Here in the lands of the Maya, of course, my focus is on 2012, as is for many people. And I would like to know your opinion of what you see coming at 2012, which is a pivotal time in our, at least in the Mayan calendar, and certainly much expectation and fear and review of what is coming for us. Do you have any opinions about that?
Oh yeah, that's a big topic. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of theories out there. You know, Planet X, the end of the world, and a lot of stuff is out there.
Yeah.
I have to say, because I have met this light, which is really infinite love, and it's really, I have this positive view. I'm more optimistic, you could say. So I, in my view, what I see coming is a death of the illusion, in a way, a death of the matrix. That's more how I see it. I have great hope that because we're going through a pretty tense time right now of very hard fear and very hard ignorance, thick ignorance, and my hope really is that what 2012 is going to bring is a death of this ignorance, of this illusion, so we can really get to the other side, which is really the golden rule, and actually even what the Mayans call in Lakesh, I am the other you. So in a way, there is no other. We, you and I are one. And that's really, I'm hoping that that's where we're going to in the world and in the theater of politics, actually. That's my hope.
Well, being here with the Mayans, of course, the intention of the Mayan prophecies for 2012, in my opinion at least, is that we're talking about the end of time, not the end of the world.
Yes.
And the end of time is, in fact, time being an element of three-dimensional consciousness. My books are in line and in vibration with the Mayan concept that we're moving out of the out of time.
Yes.
It's represented by the fact that the calendar actually ends.
Yes,
and
yes.
It symbolizes the moving out of the, in my opinion, out of the third dimension and into timelessness,
yes,
of consciousness beyond these illusions. So I think we agree here.
Yeah, very much, actually. And if you look what's going on, first I should say that the near-death experience, what people have the experience outside the body is that there's no time. It's exactly, I should say, timeless. There's this timeless state, and that is the true nature of reality. So it seems that when we come back into the body, when we're in this three-dimensional space, time exists for some reason. But actually, if we look at what's happening also in science, in quantum physics, we actually see that quantum physics is actually going beyond time. There are some books and some scientists are talking about it's the end of time, meaning that we are actually going to discover through science and through spiritual awakening and in many different paths, many different ways, we're going to discover this other dimension, the fourth dimension, the fifth dimension, where we actually break time, where we go beyond time. And therefore, people use the terminology that it is the end of time. Not the end of the world, but it is the end of the physical illusion, in a way, of the time
dimension.
Yeah, we're
dimension. In perfect agreement, which I'm so thrilled about. It's nice to be able to support each other and our viewpoints, although I'm always open to disagreement.
but there is a lot of disagreement. I mean, of course, with what's happening with climate change now and all this fear, you know, what's going to happen? Are we all, you know, on Planet X and something? I mean, there's a lot of fear out there. But for me, having had my experience, I actually believe that fear is part of the illusion. I don't believe that the light is fear. I believe it is, you know, it's love, it's trust. So I don't, personally, I don't like to fall into this category of being fearful.
Well, let's consider that fear is definitely something that is being perpetrated in the mass media and designs of the governments that want us to be terrorized so that we can be in obedience.
Yeah, that's the control. I mean, fear is the ultimate weapon.
It is. That's why my message to, as a teacher, as a author, as a channel, is get out of the fear, face your fear, and move beyond it so you can start celebrating what's happening.
Yes.
And be in your power instead of being on your knees to the power.
Yes, I agree very much. I agree very, very much.
I, too, have had an out-of-body, a near-death experience, but I don't know how to distinguish between that, out-of-body and near-death. But I did experience being out and the timelessness of that and a very physical sense of being present. Did you have that?
A physical sense of being present. Can you please describe what you mean by that?
Well, so many times people who have not had this kind of experience have difficulty imagining the experience of being out of the body.
Yes.
And they ask me, was this like a dream state or an etheric sense? And I say, no, I was very aware of my physical being.
Yes, yes.
But I was looking at my physical body in the bed.
Yes, yes. Yes, I would agree with you. Yeah, it's go on.
Oh, I was just going to say that this is very reassuring to a lot of people because we're so attached to these bodies. No matter how much we love or don't love them, they're home. And when I was having this experience, I was just as physical in a sense of being aware of my body as I am in this dimension, in this third dimensional consciousness.
Yeah.
And I think that's very interesting.
Yeah. I think, of course, even though I would say that most people in the near-death experience, when they leave the body, they become, I mean, the body becomes more like a spiritual body in a way. And of course, the fact that people are able to see their bodies from the outside means that there's kind of a separation. But actually, what you're describing is very similar to my own experience and the research of near-death experience, is that when you leave the body, it's not like there's not a big change. It's like you're thinking inside your body, and oops, now you're outside the body, and you're still thinking in the same way. You're still aware in the same way you were before you left the body.
In fact, when I had this popping out, which I emotionally describe it as being a pop out of my body, I had a very earthly sense. I couldn't figure out what was happening. I thought maybe I should have some tea. I wandered around the house, only to come back into the bedroom to try to force myself to go back to sleep, and there I was sleeping.
Okay.
And that experience was just as physical, just as real as, if we can use the word real in these situations,
yes.
I'm sitting here now talking to you.
Yes.
And I think this is, you know, really, really exciting for people that fear death, because if you have such an experience, you know without a question in your mind that we do not die.
Yes, that's very, 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 very for sure in a way. I mean, actually, even the research has even scientific evidence that consciousness does continue. That's really, I mean, it's really, there's been so many studies done now with scientific evidence that really prove actually that the consciousness continues. And as you say, there's really great hope, because also what people describe when they leave the body is that when they enter this other dimension of the life, it is just love and compassion and joy and peace beyond anything we can imagine here on Earth. I usually say, well, imagine the most love you ever felt on Earth in the most powerful moment, and then you still have to multiply 100 times, if not 1,000 times, to imagine what it's felt like outside the body. And that's really where we go. That's like our true nature. That's really the fundamental level of the universe, is this love. And that's really where we go. So there's really no reason to fear, because when we believe in that, or when we know that, as near-death experiences do, then there is nothing more to fear, because you do not fear death. You know it is love where you return to, and therefore there's nothing in this world to fear anymore.
What do you feel about reincarnation? Because obviously, if you're going to the eternal light, if you believe in, do you believe in reincarnation?
Yeah, I guess so. That would be a logical conclusion from, you know, actually when life continues, then, well, it has to go somewhere, right? Then reincarnation would be a logic, you know, conclusion from that. So yes, I do. I have to say I have no personal experience of being reincarnated, so I cannot say for sure, but I would say I'm definitely open to that.
So then in your concept of there is only love and light, what do you say to the question of then why is it, I mean, we're going really philosophical now.
Yes.
Why, in your vision, would people choose to reincarnate possibly into another lifetime of difficulty or suffering or whatever when they are in a state of bliss between the lifetimes?
Yeah, there's two answers. The first answer is that when you leave the body, it is so powerful, and some people are maybe not ready to meet this light and to become one with it. That's one question. I mean, if we have lived in ignorance, and then we all of a sudden meet this truth, I mean, it's really like all of a sudden you go beyond the matrix, and then you see something that you're not prepared to see. And some people, some researchers believe that some people, because it's too much for them, they recoil, they bounce off and come back in a way.
Oh, that's
the one answer, yeah, because it's too much. We're not ready. We're not prepared for this meeting.
Well, I can say that in one experience that I had in a regression, I was taken to, well, I was on a wheel, mm-hmm. spinning and spinning and spinning, and it would stop, and I would see different lifetimes.
Yes.
And one, I was clutching a mountain. I was on a mountaintop clutching onto the surface, which was crystalline.
Yes.
And the light was so intense, I couldn't bear it.
Yes, yes.
It was blinding.
Yes,
and the guide said, try to hang in there. You're in the total light.
Yes.
But it was just so, so bright. I just leapt back off and got back on that spinning wheel.
Yes, yes. Because it's too much for us. It's, in a way, the truth is so big. It's, the universe is so infinite that to handle it in one moment is really a lot for a person or for the individual. So if you're not prepared, you know, you will turn back into the cave and hide in a way. You'll go back into the ignorance and hide because this meeting is too powerful. I mean, in my own experience, when when I came back from my experience, I actually had to go through psychotherapy because I was really, in a way, afraid I'd lost my mind because the experience was so big. You have to imagine that I was an atheist before and I only knew one world, the physical reality. And then all of a sudden I have this extremely powerful experience when I see a totally different reality that's much more real than this reality. So
yeah.
Now all of a sudden you're split. So in a way for me it was really, it was in a way too much information to handle in a way. So that's one answer.
I can imagine going from an atheist platform to being in the divine light must have been quite.
It's
quite
just like, you know, I mean, literally my mind was blown away, literally. Yeah.
Right.
I would also say the other answer to what we're talking about is that actually when we look at what is really the purpose of the near-death experience, and here everybody agree, researchers and people who have this experience too, and me included, that the purpose of the near-death experience is that to learn. I mean, really, it seems that the purpose of life is to learn, to grow. It's like it's a school. So let's say if you haven't learned your lessons in life, you were supposed to learn this and this, but you didn't, then it would make sense that, well, if it's all about learning, if it's all about growing the soul, then it would make sense some of us would have to come back to learn the next lesson or to start over if we didn't learn what we're supposed to learn. So it would also make sense from that point of view.
I have a question for you.
What's that?
I have a new question for you.
Yeah.
Did you experience that feeling of not wanting to come back into your body, or were you eager to return?
Some people are asked if they want to return or they're told they have to return. But because I didn't have a guide within my experience, my experience was more formless in a way, and there wasn't beings in my experience. So nobody asked me or told me I had to go back. I just came back. But I have to say, coming back, and this was part of the reason also I went through the psychotherapy, it's a kind of depression because when you've experienced this absolute love, this pure peace, this absolute joy beyond human comprehension, when you've experienced that and then you have to go back in this world of suffering, of up and down and black and white, then, you know, you wish you have stayed there because it's so much better.
But wouldn't you agree that that it's very possible that the experience from this is how to create that joy and light
yes.
in the world of suffering.
Exactly. That's it. Because then you ask yourself, why did I come back? Why didn't I stay, right? And the conclusion most people, they make is that, well, there must be some kind of job we have to do here. There must be, I mean, because there is a purpose. I mean, that's definitely the experience. So what's the purpose? The purpose must be to bring more of that light, to manifest the light in this dimension, to share the love, to share the compassion, and to share the knowledge of this light. And that really seems to be the purpose when we come back.
And let me interject that that's what Rene Jorgensen is doing with his book, Awakening Afterlife. His website is www.awakeningafterlife.com, and you'll want to read about what he's up to. And we're going to get back to interviewing him in just a minute, but I do want to open this up to questions. I'm particularly interested in call-ins for people who have had a near-death experience and would like to talk to Renee or talk to me. Please go to www.bbsradio.com. and look for station 2 numbers to call in on. Okay, I'm back with you, Renee.
All right, good.
So I wanted to, take this is very exciting to me because as I said, I've had a similar experience, and this was a life-altering experience because I knew for certain that we don't die, and this realization is something you really can never convince anyone of, although I'm not trying to do that, but it's, to me, so important to be able to help people understand their immortality, and yet, until you've had this experience, it's very difficult to grasp.
Yes, that's true.
So, let's go on now with, I'd like to know about the organization that you're working with. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, it's called IANS, IANS.org. It is the International Association of Near-Death Studies. Basically what it is you have IANS, it's a group of scientists, researchers, and then it's also a group of people who've had near-death experiences. So there is what's going on within the group is on the scientific side, there's a lot of research going on where people are actually trying to prove that the near-death experience is real and trying to prove that life continues. of course, imagine if you have the proof that life, you know, that death is not the end. If you have the actual proof and you're able to, should we say, persuade the masses, then you really have an argument for something bigger than life, and thereby you can, you know, you can take away the fear. So there's a lot of important research going on, and this is research set up in hospitals where they actually find find people who have this experience, and they actually prove by measuring. They have something called EEG measurement, where they measure the electrical brain waves, and they actually have proof from these studies that people have near-death experience even though that their EEG measurement is flat. That means that consciousness actually seems to go on and exist outside the brain. And then, of course, you also have the other side, which are the near-death experiences, and there's a lot of support activity going on. There's a lot of it's called Friends of Irons, where there's groups in each, in many states in the U.S. and all over the world, where people can get together, and because it's really important when you come back to have a group or somebody to listen to your story, because one of my big problems, for instance, and this is very general to people who come back, is that they cannot talk about this with anybody. Usually people are like me, they were maybe not spiritual or anything, so their friends and family will reject them talking about this story. They will say, well, it's, you know, it's illusion or it's craziness. So it's really important to have a group of friends you can come back and relate your story and share the story. And also through listening to other people's stories, you get the understanding, well, I'm not crazy, because this is something that happens to millions of people all over the world. So the support group is also very, very active and very important. So you have these two sides. You have the research, the scientific side, and then you have the support group side of the organization, which is really important.
And that's called IAMS.org?
No, IAMS, it's IANDS.org.
Okay, international, people, write that down. It sounds like a really good site to investigate.
Yes.
And especially for
it has a lot of information. It has a lot of information on in all fields. So it's IANDS.org. It's IANDS.org. It's the International Association of Near-Death Studies. They also have a journal. They have a scientific journal where they publish all the new research, and they have a journal for near-death experiences where people relate their stories, and they are like, once a year they have a conference where you can participate. It's usually in the States, and here you can participate, and you can listen to the stories. You can come and share yours, and so there's a lot of interesting stuff going on there with the organization.
That sounds wonderful. What do you say about, then, people who do astral journeying, and how do you equate that state of consciousness with what you've experienced?
Well, actually, my experience is very, very similar to astral projection, and I know some of the research done in out-of-body experience is also very similar to my own experience. And actually, what I'm trying to do in my work and in my book is really that, because what we find in near-death experience is that the stories are really subjective. I mean, this is not all Christians, actually few, but some Christians, they would see Christ. But there, as if you would go to another culture, whatever religion they have, they would meet the religious figure of their culture. So who do you really meet? Is it Christ or is it Buddha? I mean, you know, what's the truth behind this, right? So, well, what I'm trying to go is behind this and actually find the core experience of the near-death experience. And there you see that these meetings with religious figures and even with relatives, because, for instance, there's one study that shows that these meetings with dead relatives are really not dead after all. The one study finds that 37% of these meetings are with people who are still alive. So my view and where I'm trying to go is that these meetings and these religious figures are really projections. They are subjective,
right,
projections into this dimension, this other dimension. And that's really where we connect it to, for instance, the research of astral projection and astral travel and out-of-body experience. There is one researcher, Dr. Carlos Alvarado. He explains from his research that what people say about the out-of-body experience is that this other dimension is real. It's a real dimension, but our mind, our mentality interacts with it. So that's how you project whatever you bring of your personality, of your conditioning, of your culture, you bring with you, you project
sure.
into it. You project it into it. And
interesting.
Yes?
Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah,
I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, it's okay. And that's also what we find in the near-death experience. Here, many researchers conclude that when you leave the body and enter this dimension, it is a co-created experience. Because it is experienced through the mind, we are able to project with the mind into this experience. So yeah, I'm trying to go beyond it. Yes?
There's one question that remains, though, that you, as an atheist, would... Well, let me backtrack. My father was a declared atheist, and he was really quite verbal about this and insistent.
Yes,
and
me too.
Antagonistic about any kind of spiritual information. And when
yes.
he was on his deathbed, he had a near-death experience before he passed.
Yes.
And he turned to my mother and said, Mary, okay, I'd like to, again, avoid any religious overtones to what we're talking about, but his words were, Mary is waiting for me.
Yes.
And my mother was quite flabbergasted after years of listening to his just adamant attitude about the nonsense of religion and,
yes.
and all of that. So I'd like you to speak to that aspect, that as a former atheist, you did not then take with you, let's say, images or symbols of your own belief system. Would you agree?
Yes, yes, very much, very much. I didn't bring that, I would call it cultural conditioning. And actually what we find, we even find with people who are very religious, we find few meet like a religious figure, but actually most don't meet a religious figure. In the research, what we find is that when people experience what we would call God in religion, it is God in a very broad sense. So the experience would be as God would be experienced as the true nature of reality or as the fundamental level of the universe. So it's more like the structure. It's like an energy.
Mm-hmm.
And this is actually, if we parallel this to quantum physics, here we also find that they're trying to get at what's beyond our physical dimension is these extra dimensions, which are really the fundamental level of the universe, which is, in essence, energy. And it also concludes that everything we see in the physical world matter is not matter, really. It is energy and vibration. So we can really make that parallel, too, that in a way, when we talk of God, it is it's more like an energy. It's more like a vibration of energy in another dimension.
Well, but in all dimensions, wouldn't you think?
What's that?
Wouldn't you think that the God essence is permeates all the dimensions?
Yes, yes. All the dimensions are connected. Everything is one. This is really what, I mean, when we talk about ignorance and when we talk about the illusion, it's really the illusion of being separate, because what the near-death experience also teaches is that everything is interconnected, just like in quantum entanglement. Everything is connected. Everything is one. That's really the fundamental spiritual experience. So when we have this very powerful experience of oneness, of love, of peace and joy, of course, then all of a sudden, like in your father's case, then we will go back into our culture and use the words and terminology that we knew from our culture. And this could be Jesus or Mary in this sense. So you try to interpret the experience of this with something which is really indescribable and beyond comprehension. So trying to describe it, we have to use the language of the world we live in, and that's why many people use the religious terminology and the religious language.
Even if they were not religious in the,
yes,
in the lifetime.
Because now, imagine, even me, you know, imagine now you have an experience of something you simply cannot describe, and all of a sudden the only word that really adapts to that is God, because God must be something that's greater than what we can understand. So when you have this experience, you come back and you grab at the language you have. And of course now you're in a way a believer, because this is really, wow, you didn't know this existed. So that makes you open, and then we see that most people who have near-death experience, they become either more religious or spiritual in a way, because all of a sudden they're open to something bigger than themselves.
So what would you say about the, how to phrase this question,
yeah?
People that fear the dark side. I personally believe that if a devil exists, it's a creation I prefer to call God prime creator.
Yes.
But that's not important. But the aspect of a devil essence to me is just a source of wisdom creating the absolute polarity to light in order that we have the opportunity to experience free will.
Yes.
And I'd like you to talk about that, because I'm sure that a lot of people are fearful that in passing they're going to have to go through this darkness.
Yes.
Do you have any comments about that?
Yes, definitely. I mean, that's basically what I do is I try to lead out of this negative experience, what the religions would call hell. And my view on this is, as I just described before, everything that happens within this dimension that is physical or that is has something to do with our reality as demons or hell, that would be projections. And this is really what you find. You really find that people, they bring these ideas and these manifestations and they project it into the light. And what I try to do is I try to look at, well, how do you get out of these experiences? And I should say, as my own experience of this, having this negative life review, which is really painful and could be, if you talk in metaphor, it could be kind of equated to what the religions talk about as hell. The way out of it is really to stop the projection, to stop the negative mind, to stop the negative projection. And what the research tells us is that people can do so either by calling for help, like they would, if they resort to a religious language, they would call for Jesus or Buddha or whatever their religion is to help them, to be their guide. Or also what people can do is to surrender to the love in a way, to surrender to this light. So
that's a great word and expression, to surrender to the light.
Yes, that's really what it is. And actually, I add something else beyond the surrender to the light. I add that, well, if you know, because in my view, in my experience, the essence of this experience was my true nature. I experienced this light as my true nature. And this, many people describe that there's this, it feels like a homecoming. Many people talk about it's like coming home to yourself. So what I say is that, well, if we have a foundation upon knowing who we are, I mean, the answer to the question, who am I? Like, not the body and not the work and all this stuff, but really knowing who our true self, our soul is, and knowing this in everyday life, and also practicing to have a solid foundation, like even in difficult times, okay, we can be sad and life can be hard, but we still have this solid foundation on knowing who we are, and this is who I am. And by knowing that, we have a solid foundation to step on the other side when we actually leave the body, because that's really the essence, in my view, of where we go, is we return home to our true nature. So practicing this, knowing who we are, this can be practiced through meditation or through a connection with nature or walking nature, or some people, they even, you know, work out or they do running and stuff, and that connects them to who they really are. That, for me, is the ultimate way to be safe and to know that the negative projections are not real. They're illusion in a way. That for me,
well,
is the way out.
You know, a lot of these projections are put there deliberately. I get back to this question again, by governments, by religions too, because
yes.
Today religion has become a political essence. It's
yes.
The basis for most wars in humankind.
Yes, yes.
And these aspects are being instrumentalized most definitely by governments that use religion to divide people. It's very sad, but this is the reality on our planet. And so it's very important for people who are following religious beliefs to be certain that they are not exclusive of other people's belief systems as well, and other
yes.
religions.
Yes.
And this, unfortunately, is getting more and more difficult to find in our struggle with religion, because it seems to be that it's being capitalized upon to put through various political games and doctrines and even laws.
Yes, yes.
And most definitely to stimulate war consciousness.
Yes, that's true, that's true. I mean, basically, the world has competition. There's a competition in business, in religion, in, you know, it's all about competition. And in a way, this desire to control, in my view, is fear. You want to control because you have fear that without you controlling the world, the events, it will go wrong. So that's really fear for me. So in a way, to get out of this, and this is really where the near-death experience has a big message for religions as we know them, it is that this dimension of the light, or we could call it God in religious terminology, that is beyond human comprehension. It is really beyond description. It's beyond comprehension. So the lesson from that is that no book and no religious figure has a patent on God or on heaven. And that's really a way to...
Yes, I can interrupt you for a minute, because
yeah.
I wanted to say it's also beyond interpretation
yes.
by anyone else but the self.
Exactly. That's true. And that's the other point here. Nobody else can tell you your truth. You have to find it for yourself. That's really the important factor here. And also understanding that every individual, I mean, when you go there, when you meet the light, it's very personal. This is what many near-death experiences tell us, that it is extremely personal. It is between you and the light. It's between you and God. It has nothing to do with between you and Jesus or you and the church. So in a way, we all have a direct connection to God. And that's really what also happened. You know, that's what Luther did as part of the Enlightenment, was telling us that, well, we don't need the institution. We don't need the church. It might be able to help some people, but we don't need that control. We don't need that institution, because we all have a direct connection to God. We all have a direct connection to truth, because everything is interconnected. All dimensions are connected through our essence. So who we really are, our soul, is really that truth. And that's really where we return to.
Yes, and I wanted to reiterate that I've just spent the most incredible time in the shamanic world of the Maya, and climbing through the jungle, and being near the earth, listening to the sounds of earth. And I really recommend that people do the very best they can to get as close to the earth as they can, out of the rat race and back to the real essence of being human.
Yes, I agree with you
there
very much.
There you find all the truth, the scent, the birds. It's just, it's so healing for the soul. And especially getting away from all of the drumming of the war and fear and politics and trends, and just getting back to the simplicity of being human.
Yes.
We seem to be getting, in some ways, further and further away from that.
Yes, it's ironic, as we're getting further and further away, we're creating this, you know, this destruction of nature, and now everybody's becoming aware of the global climate change. So it's really, at the same time as we're separating ourselves from nature, we're also becoming more aware. And I really think that we're also in an awakening in this sense. We're really coming back to this understanding that life and that nature is really sacred, that Mother Earth is really part of who we are. And that's really the shamanic wisdom there that you talk about also.
Yeah, and, well, you know, it seems the human nature that we have to get shocked before we take action.
Yes, you're very right.
This is in our own lifetimes. We get complacent. We get comfortable.
Yes.
And so we are now seeing a real surge in response to the ecological situation as we see the planet in revolution, revolting in ways that are just unthinkable.
Yes.
And even, if I can insert a political comment, even about the government, because I always tell people, I think I said the same thing last week, even George Bush... it had to be bad enough for people to say, whoa, this is not right. And so even in the political systems that we have, we're looking at our particular our leaders and saying, wait a minute here. If you look at the states and the questioning, the fact that Bush is now down to, what, 22% popularity?
Yes, yes.
And going down. You look at Pakistan and Musharraf, the rebellion there.
Yes, yes, yes.
All around the world, it looks like the public are starting to understand that it's time to take action and to stand up and get into that truth that you've spoken about throughout this.
Yeah, and I think exactly what you're referring to right now, what's going on politically right now is showing us how to awaken, because, you know, we all agree with the horrible events of 9/11, but then if we see what happened after, I mean, there was no links to Al-Qaeda, there was no weapons of mass destruction, but still we went on the warpath, and now look what we have created, you know. So
now people are waking up. Iran.
Yes, yes, and now it's continuing. Well, let's bomb the next country. By all means, let's continue, because, you know, if we don't kill everybody else first, they're going to kill us for sure, right? I mean, that's really human nature. Or maybe
really human nature. It's political nature.
Yes, because that's our fear. That's our fear.
If you provoke this kind of hysterical fear in people,
yes,
in the case of what we're talking about, it's just terror, I'm terrified, the big bad boogeyman, the devil. is out to get
exactly.
you.
Exactly. But I think what you're relating to is that, well, maybe at the beginning here there was support by 70 or 80%, but now that support is down to 20, 22%. So what's happening is people are seeing reality. They're seeing, hey, okay,
exactly.
they tell us one thing, but when I look at the reality, it tells me something else. Okay, they're lying. So now people are starting to wake up. And that's really important that we keep this awakening going and that we keep the mistrust of the governments, of the conspiracies and what they're trying to tell us, that we keep this mistrust and try to make our own decision. I mean, don't trust the media. The media is not objective and independent in any way. I mean,
well, wait. Let's not say that because BBS Radio is absolutely
oh,
out there.
Oh, yeah, no. Of course. I'm talking about the mainstream. The mainstream, yeah.
Let's always say the mainstream because there's BBS Radio and there are a lot of other channels that are not in the mainstream that are doing their best to get people awakening. And we have to thank also the Internet for that because
yes, the Internet
is a great vehicle for us.
It's a great revolution.
And that's one of the reasons why they want to take it away from us, right?
Yes, now they want to control that too because they see its potential, and that's a control again, right? Now we have a democratic means of communication here, and now they're trying to take that away too, right? So it's a balance. It's a struggle that doesn't stop here. We have to continue in a way. That's really...
And what really matters is to question all of the information that comes to you that ever evokes fear or feelings of powerlessness, information that gives you a sense of being completely incapacitated to make change in this world, and most of all, the feeling that, oh, what's the point of not running the water when I brush my teeth? It's too small a gesture to make, and that is not true, and everyone has to wake up to the fact that we all create this reality, and we all can affect the reality.
Yes.
And if the media was putting out that message, we wouldn't be in the soup that we're in.
That's true. I agree with you very much. I mean, I usually say, I mean, you watch what you eat because you become what you eat. So, I mean, you wouldn't eat, you know, food that makes you feel bad, right? So it's in a way you really have to handpick what you eat and you have to handpick what energy you take in. And that means the mainstream media and the politics and everything. You really have to handpick it. And hold on to the foundation. What's the foundation? What's the true nature of all human beings? What's the thing that connects us? Well, that is really the oneness. That is the love. That is the compassion. That is really the truth. That's what we learn in the near-death experience. When people leave the body, they experience the true nature of what reality is. It is love. That is really the basic conclusion of all the research. So we have to hold on to that foundation. So whenever somebody's trying to tell us it's not love, whenever people are trying to inspire hate or fear, we have to say, hold on a minute. That's not the reality. Reality is love, and the reality is that we're all human beings and that we're all interconnected. And therefore, when they're trying to tell me that I should forget the golden rule and just kill people, hey, something's wrong here, you know, and then really be careful of taking in that energy.
Yeah, I think that, you know, because people say to me, when my message is also that everything is love, and they say, how can you say that, Patricia, when there's nothing but destruction all around us? And I say, well, first of all, you choose to see only destruction all around you. I see beauty. Second of all, remember one thing, the basic element, the basic aspect of being human is the search for love. The search to receive love and the search to give love.
Yes.
And even though there are all these other shadows around us, this is the basic human need. If you ask a million people what they're looking for most in life, it's love.
Yes.
And
yes.
So you focus on love, you find love. You focus on fear, rage, and violence, and you create it.
Yes, I agree. That's exactly what I'm saying.
So much is dependent now on the individual will, and part of this awakening is recognizing, first of all, the illusions that are being presented to humankind violently, immediately, and without concern for anyone, and then taking action to either accept or reject what you receive. And if you reject it, as I'm talking about mainstream media, do something about it.
Yes.
As you're doing, as I'm trying to do, and so BBS Radio and so many people are really out there now, and sometimes we're putting ourselves on the line because it's not popular to speak this truth.
That
doesn't
true.
Matter.
That's true. It's our obligation to speak truth to power. I mean, that's really our obligation. But you're right, sometimes it's not easy and it creates a lot of obstruction, you know, really resistance.
And unpopularity with people in power.
Yeah, that's it.
But you just have to move beyond the obstruction because, as I always tell people, I don't fear death because I know it doesn't exist. So I can speak my truth because I'm not in fear-based.
Yeah, exactly. And when you hold on to that truth, when you hold on to your soul, then you have nothing to fear because that's where you return to when you die. You return to your true nature. You return home. But actually, the people who have something to fear are the ones who are not aligned with the truth, the people who create the fear and the destruction. I mean, they might think that's reality because that's the way the world looks to them. But really, when we leave this world, that's when we have the awakening after life. And that's really when we wake up to the fact that death is really it's a mirror in which the entire meaning of life is reflected. And there through, I mean, that's when we experience reality. And if we're not in line with this truth, we're gonna bounce off it, and that's not very pleasant. So therefore,
I mean,
we have to hold on to who we are. We can never let go of our. We can never let our soul be corrupted, no matter what goes on in the world. In my view.
And that means standing up, finding your truth, and standing up for it. And I like to remind people that if you fear hell, you're already in it.
Yes, exactly. That is the fear. The projection of fear is hell. So if you do
it, you're already in it. If that's how you're spending your time and energy,
exactly.
And thoughts.
That's it. That's it. So just the work to get out of that. And as you say, nature is a really powerful way to reconnect us to who we are, our soul. I mean, to connect to Mother Earth. Whatever we do, just keep connecting to that because that is really the truth, and that's the way out of the illusion. That's the way out of the matrix.
So, do you believe that we're going to go through an ascension process?
Yes. That's why. Actually, that is. That's actually the reason I wrote the book. The last chapter, I actually talk about how you return to the life. I actually believe that we're in a time in evolution where ascension is possible, and that's why I try to build up to this question: how do I ascend? How do I return back to the light? How do I return back to the love? Because I believe it's possible right now. I believe that we have the opportunity of not being reincarnated, of not going back. So yes, I believe in that very much. And I believe that's really the overall purpose. I mean, the purpose of life seems to be to learn, to grow. But at the end of this learning, at the end of this growth, is the ultimate ascension where we return and never come back. And I really believe that's the overall thing that's going on right now. And that's maybe the portal, the gate that's coming in 2012. And that's part of the reason I wrote my book, too.
Oh, that's it's really nice to be so in sync with a guest, Renee. And this hour is basically gone. It's really flown.
I'm
so grateful to you. I would like to repeat all the information for people to reach you. The website is awakeningafterlife.com. The guest is Renee Jorgensen. That's the same title of the book. Renee, I've got time for one more thing. I'd like to ask you if you had any special message for the listeners, something to leave them with from your book, from your message, from your soul.
Yeah, I think my central message is really, as I said before, the Mayan in Lakesh, I am the other you. There is no other. You know, we are the other, as it is said. So really, for me, the golden rule is really, if there's any rule in life we should try to live by, it's really the golden rule. I mean, even though times are hard and what's going on politically seems really dark and bad, I mean, we can still give this love to strangers, beggars on the street, to our family. We can go deeper. We can respect our neighbor. We can feel compassion for the people who are suffering in other cultures and other places. We can really try to go deeper into the golden rule. And I really believe that's, for me also personally, that's really what makes me feel alive, to try to go deeper into the love and make a deeper connection with the true nature, which is this love, this light, and thereby...
Yeah.
The golden rule becomes a path of joy in life.
A whole great spirit to that. And please remember that when you walk by a beggar on the street and your first emotion is, what a pain, these people constantly, constantly begging. Know that a lot of people are in real difficulty. And so
yes.
Try to get into that nature of giving to the other. Renee, I want to thank you again. And I celebrate your work and your book. And thank you for spending this time with us.
Well, thank you so much, Patricia, and thank you for having me. It's been a real pleasure. I really enjoyed that.
Thank you. And before I go, I would like to tell everybody that next week I'm going to have on Dr. Fred Bauman, M.D. We're going to be talking about some real stuff beyond the matrix. His work is about attention deficiency hyperactivity disorder and the con that's being fed to the people about how your children are diagnosed with this disorder, which he says does not exist. It's a hype. Know, learn what you can do about this and the dangers that are involved with the government dictating that you need to medicate your children. So that's for next week. Don't miss the show. This is Patricia Corey, www.SyrianRevelations.net. Thanks for listening in. I'll be back in Italy next week, and I'll be looking forward to coming back to you on bbsradio.com. Bye-bye.